This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Adrienne Hill. We're talking saving and investing on this week's show, trying to figure out if and how we can ever retire or ever afford to retire. And this might be the topic that we get the most listener mail about on our website at marketplacemoney.org, on Facebook and on Twitter. So today we've got a bunch of calls lined up and we brought in a ringer to answer questions. Jill Schlesinger. She's a certified financial planner and CBS News business analyst. Hey, Jill.
Great to be with you.
So before we get to listener questions, I saw a Gallup poll that said about half of young people are pretty optimistic about retirement. They think they're going to have enough money to take care of themselves, to enjoy life after work. And I got to wonder, realistic or not so much?
Oh, I think realistic.
Yeah?
I think especially, yeah, because I think with the youth, at least, you've got time on your side. A lot of the kids who are, say, under 30 years old, notice I say kids at the big tell about my own age. if you're under 30, you really have learned painful lessons coming into a tough job market. You've probably seen your parents suffer, maybe your grandparents suffer during the Great Recession. And I think that these are actually, they tend to be the types of people who become very good savers. So I'm optimistic with them.
So talking about and thinking about retirement can actually be really scary, especially when we toss around numbers like we need to save 15% of our income. I wonder what advice you have just to sort of remain undaunted by those numbers. I mean, part of you wants to just stick your head in the sand and hope it goes away.
I understand that. I mean, it's not unlike the first time I ever went to Weight Watchers when I was in college and you step on the scale, the moment before you step on the scale, and you're freaking out. So it is a bit like that and it can become daunting. But I'll use that Weight Watchers analogy. The cool thing is if you break it down little pieces at a time, it's not so daunting. So I think the best advice is that you just have to do what is within your capabilities of doing today. And you don't have to worry that you're not doing 15% this second. There may be other priorities in your life that you have to deal with first. Maybe you've got to pay down some nasty old credit card debt. Maybe you've got to pay down some student loans and you can't do 15%, but you want to get in the habit of putting some amount of money aside, hopefully the most you can stomach and still have a good life, and just increase that a little bit as you can. You know, when I was a financial planner, I did that for 14 years. What I found fascinating was that sometimes people who came in with the worst, most screwed up financial situations in the beginning turned it around. It was like a miracle before my eyes. And you could see that once they made a decision to make the change, once they said, yeah, I'm going to clock that debt down, I'm going to really do my best, and then they shifted the money they were using to pay down debt and they moved it into savings, they became some of the best savers of all of my clients.
So sort of like Weight Watchers, you just got to put your mind to it, huh?
Well, you have to put your mind to it. And just like Weight Watchers, you probably have to put some sort of plan in place. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to have an 80-page Harvard Business School study of your financial life, but you have to have a few goals that you're really striving to reach. And then you have to have certain action steps to help you get there. You don't have to make it so daunting. You know, it's not that complicated. It's just very emotional. And when we take some of the emotions out and you put your game plan together, it makes it a lot easier to achieve.
So let's go to some callers right now. We have Steven in New York City. Hey, Steven.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. So you just sold your apartment. Why now? Why'd you sell it now?
We have a daughter who's preparing to go into kindergarten soon, and we were running out of space, and we wanted to be in a better school district.
And what makes this new school district worth moving for?
It's the best in Brooklyn.
All righty. So what's your question for Jill?
So we walked away from the sale of our apartment with a nice little nest egg. Because we had to move quickly, we decided to rent where we are now, and I think we'll be there for about 2 years, and then we'll likely look to buy again. And when I went into the bank with the checks after the closing, I asked about CD rates, some place to park it besides just putting it in my savings account where it is now. And they immediately started trying to sell me on a managed investment portfolio. Yeah, and I always get suspicious when banks try to sell something because they're not usually in the business of giving away money. So I listened to their pitch, and they call me about once a week. It's been about a month, and I'm just sort of not really sold on that, even though the rates seem to be good, and I like the access to the money in case something happened. But the fees were at 1.6%, which I thought were very high.
How much money is it? What's the nest egg?
So after, you know, after paying off all sorts of bills and having an emergency fund left over, I think there's about $100,000 that we have to do something with.
And presumably that $100,000 represents a down payment or something beyond the down payment?
That would be less than a down payment, more than likely in New York.
In New York, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and you, and it's a 2-year time horizon, right?
Yes. And, you know, obviously, you know, it's, I do have, you know, about 3 months of expenses put away, but I'm always a little paranoid. So if something really bad happened, I would like to have access to it even within the 2 years, although I'm not planning for that.
So I'm going to give you 5 stars for having the best first idea, which is I have to keep this money safe because I cannot afford to lose it. So even though you have rotten, like silly, laughable CD rates, that's about what you're going to be looking at because you're going to start looking for, if you want, you know, renting for 2 years, that means you're going to start looking in maybe a year and a half.
Right.
And you could find something fast.
Right.
And if you found something really fast in that, you know, the first weekend you went out looking and you needed access to the money, you would be really heartbroken if it were invested in some managed account and the market happened to be down.
Right.
And you can't, you just can't invest for a 18-month or a 24-month time horizon. It's just, it's asking for trouble. So, you know, could you have some money in a high-yield savings account? Could you go searching for credit unions for better rates? Yes. Are they still going to be rotten rates? Yeah, they definitely are. But you're trading that low interest for security of the principal, and you cannot afford to gamble this $100,000. You just can't. So unless you had some other like high interest debt that was outstanding, I would go with your initial inclination, which is keep this money safe.
At least those bankers will stop calling, huh?
Well, you'll miss the banker. It'll be sad for you. Maybe we should call him every week now. Just check in. How you doing?
That would be a good idea. Okay, so you're thinking like a 3-month CD that you just keep rolling over?
Yeah, I think, you know, you could do maybe a, you know, there's a couple of tricks here. There are some banks that will offer a 7-year CD. I know, stay with me here.
All right.
You're not going to keep it there for 7 years, but they have very low penalties for breaking the CD. So you can go online and you can, you know, there's a great website called depositaccounts.com.
Okay.
And they give you all the different CD rates. And what you'll find is there are some CDs that are longer term that if you break them before that term have a very sort of a minor penalty for breaking them. So you may go longer with the idea that, okay, big deal. If I had to pay the penalty, I would. And you're collecting that higher interest. But when you start comparing, it is paltry. I know it. But it is way more important that that money is secure for you.
What do you think is a good target percentage that I should look for?
Well, we always your first target is not to lose it, so we've already accomplished that. I'm very happy about that. We are
not
doing business.
Right.
That's right. You did not start the year at minus 1.6, so that's good news. You know, it's going to be like 1 or 2%.
Okay.
And just hold your nose and do it, huh?
Absolutely.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
This is Marketplace Money from APM. Jill Schlesinger is my guest this hour. She's a certified financial planner and CBS News business analyst, and we're taking your question about retirement. If you have a question that Marketplace Money can help you with, you can always get in touch with us on our Facebook page or visit marketplacemoney.org and send us an email. And that's what Jane of Montana did. She's with us now, Jill. Hey, Jane.
Hi.
So you're about ready to retire, hopefully. Is that right?
Yes, I would love to.
So what's standing in your way?
A debt. Mm-hmm. We have incurred quite a lot, actually the most debt we've ever had in the past 10 years. And that's what's keeping me from retiring right now.
And how old are you?
I am 70.
70 years old. So where'd this debt come from?
Not willing to say no is part of it, a pretty big part of it. We did have to replace two vehicles for ourselves this past year.
We is you and your husband, is that right?
My husband, right. Mm-hmm. But we have, we've purchased a number of vehicles for our offspring, and the last one did not have my okay, but it was purchased anyway. And he has retired, my husband has.
So you're the one paying for this vehicle you didn't condone the purchase of?
Right. My husband recently invested some money that he inherited, and the first quarter we lost $1,000. Several said that that's probably from fees. At the time, I wanted him to find somebody to talk to first before investing and maybe pay off bills. I'm wondering now, can we pay off or should we take that out? We could pay off about half of the debt with that. We would still be left with probably $10,000 to $12,000. That's debt. As far as savings, what you would say, emergency funds, it's somewhere around $5,000 to $6,000. I have a 401k worth between $25,000 and $30,000. And I understand I have to roll that over or withdraw it or something starting when I'm 70 and a half, which is coming up pretty soon.
So, hi, Jane. It's Jill here.
Hi.
The first thing is that I think your primary question, I just added the numbers up quickly. It sounded like you have about $50,000 in debt, right?
And yeah, 57.
57. Okay. And that debt, do you happen to know the interest rate that is on that debt? Do you have about a ballpark about everything?
They go all the way from 4.95 interest to 9.5.
Okay. So this makes it very easy because, of all, the money that is, I'll tell you why, the money that is right now that you said that was invested, that you lost some money on, it could have been fees, it could have been the market, who knows, doesn't matter. The most important thing that you could do is take that money out of wherever it's invested and start paying down your debt going from the highest interest loan down to the lowest interest loan. And you can brag to your husband that he's a genius because he has figured out a way to get a 9.5% guaranteed return on his investment. That's all he's doing when you're paying down a 9.5% debt. It's like the most amazing thing in the world. You're not going to get 9.5% guaranteed. You can get 2% guaranteed right now. So that's the most important thing. With the $10,000 to $12,000 that remains, do you think that if you could start paying that down on an accelerated basis if you were still working?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I think the game plan would be to take the money out of the investments, pay down the highest interest debt first, and then work very hard to pay down the remaining debt. And then we get to the hard part, which is you cannot accumulate this kind of debt going forward. You just can't because you're going to work yourself into a grave.
Right.
Do you think your husband is willing to hear that?
Oh, yes. I think that he wants out of it, too.
And how does that play out in your relationship now?
Not a lot of talking. Mm. Not a lot of discussing concerning these things.
Do you think if you brought your husband and your child to the table and you sat down and talked about these things, you could get somewhere?
If I could get the son there, it's just difficult to discuss things without certain ones, you know, without him getting upset.
Do you have a trusted person in your life who could help negotiate this with your son and your husband, like a lawyer or an accountant or somebody who they both respect who could help kind of arbitrate this? Because the reason I ask is that sometimes when I was an advisor, I would often be in this position where I was helping to kind of arbitrate, mediate things, situations like this, where you have one person in the couple who just can't help stopping the kid, and the other person who wants to be a bit more of the tough love person, and it creates conflict in the couple. And frankly, it doesn't serve the kid any any good way, because the kid is just can't get out of his own way in that situation. I mean, look, you guys can't afford to do this. You can't keep you know, accumulating debt for your son or for your daughters or whoever else is it's happening for. And I'm just wondering, that debt that you is that in your husband's name or in your name jointly?
It's all of it except that one vehicle is in both of our names, but the one vehicle is just in my husband's name.
I mean, one thing that you could really start to do if he's not going to shift is that, you know, first of all, the easiest thing is you could say you can stop co-signing anything. You just cannot, that's easy, right?
Several years ago at co-signing things, yeah.
And you own your house outright?
We did. Until we borrowed a down payment for his house, for the son's house.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have the house anymore,
yeah.
But we still have
and you have
that
the debt. That's the problem. I mean, look, this is a terrible situation. If I'm being cruel, I'll give you the cruel and then the compassionate, Jill. Which one you want first, cruel or compassionate?
Let's go cruel
first. Who do you want first? You want to go cruel?
Let's go cruel, and then we'll end with compassion.
Okay, cruel that you say, I love you, honey, I'm not living like this, and I'm not going to get drowned in your inability to say no to our son, and I'm going to divorce you, and I'm going to take my 401k, and you can take your debt, and that's that. That's your big threat, right? Now I'll give you the compassionate one.
Yes, please.
Let me give you a compassionate one. Honey, I know you love our son, and I love our son. I'm really scared for our financial future. And we can't keep living like this. So we've got to figure a way out. And I think we need to go see somebody with our son, either somebody you can think of as a family friend or go pay someone by the hour to help you with this and spend a few bucks so you have some third party who's coming in and delivering the tough messages. Because otherwise, this is not one of these things where there's an easy out. This is going to be painful no matter which way you go.
Jane, good luck to you. Please let us know how this goes.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Much appreciated.
This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Adrienne Hill. Today we're talking about the hard work it takes to retire comfortably. And we've got Jill Schlesinger with us. She's a certified financial planner and CBS News business analyst. Let's go to the phones. First, we have Joshua in Roseville, Minnesota. Hey, Josh.
Hi there.
So what do you do in Roseville?
I work for the Public Works Department.
So what's your question for Jill?
Well, both my wife and I are lucky enough that we have pension plans. She's a nurse, and I contribute 6.25% to my pension, and my employer contributes as well. But my wife, it's a fully employer-paid plan, and her plan, we get a letter every year saying that it's endangered, it's yellow zone. Mm. And so I guess a couple of questions about pensions, just how much can I count on them, being that I'm only 32 now? Is it still going to be around when I'm retiring? And should I still be putting away extra money besides what I'm contributing to my pension?
That's a great question. You know, I think when you're talking about as a public works employee, I think obviously your plan is safer than your wife's, right? We know that already.
Why is that, Jill?
Well, usually because the public plan has this wonderful thing called taxation, which it can use to help fill the coffers a little bit. When you have the some of the employer plans, now I'm not saying they don't carry insurance, and it may be that they've got unfunded pension liabilities, and that's why it's in the yellow zone, not quite in the red zone yet. But that said, they're telling you that there's a problem with the plan, right? It doesn't mean that your wife's going to lose the money that's in that plan either. I mean, do they give you a cash balance, her share, or what would be converted into a cash balance of that plan on an annual basis?
Yeah, their formula is it's pretty confusing for me, but it's, you know, there's a certain number of hours to dollars that they give us on her pay stub every year.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I think that it's unlikely that you would go to zero. But if you're asking me, do I think that you should be putting extra money away? Yes, I absolutely do. Because I think that as a younger employee, my guess is that even your pension isn't as rich as some of your older coworkers who came into the system under different circumstances. And that's the problem with a lot of these pension jobs is that, you know, the benefits for the people who are 50, 60 years old are not going to change, but it's the younger ones coming in who don't have quite as rich a plan. So I think that if you can, right, in that meaning that if you can afford to put money away in addition to these pension plans, that would be great. Can your cash flow allow that?
It can. We just bought a house last year, so there's lots of demands there too. But I think, I guess that's why I was calling, to try and decide if I should be trying to make it more of a priority.
I would think so. I mean, given your age, you know, I think it probably would make sense for you guys to maybe try to put some money into a Roth IRA as a nice supplemental retirement. Do you have kids?
Yes, two very small. Well, 1 and 3-year-old.
That's
a handful there.
Yeah.
Are you tempted to start saving for college?
Yes. We're kind of relying on the grandparents for right now.
I love that.
We should start thinking about that soon.
I'm going to take you off the hook on that a little bit, though, Josh. And I would much prefer that you fund a Roth IRA than to put money into college savings. I think it's more important that you secure your retirement first before starting to save money for the kids.
Which can feel, sure, you know, jumping in here, it can feel counterintuitive, right? You got this 1 and 3-year-old there. They look at you with their sweet little eyes.
Oh, those cherubs, I know. You know, here's the problem. And I always use this analogy. And, you know, you're in the airplane and the flight attendant says, put the oxygen mask on yourself first and then on the kid. And it so goes for your financial life. You've got to secure your financial life first before you start saving for your kid's college education. There's a lot of choices for college, right? You can say, hey, kids, you're going to do work. You're going to go to a community college. You're going to go to state school. You're going to work hard. You're going to do, you know, there's not a lot of choices for retirement. There's no handy dandy federal loan program to help you through your retirement. So it's really imperative that you feel secure about your own future before you start pushing money into a 529 plan or some sort of, you know, savings account for your kid. And so I'm going to take you off the hook on that one. I would much, much prefer you put money into a Roth before you started doing college.
Josh, thanks so much for your call.
Thanks.
Good luck to you. And Jill, we've got another young person on the phone with us, Ginger from North Carolina, who also has a question about extra savings in her retirement account. Hey, Ginger.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
So tell us, what's your question for Jill?
So yeah, I'm young. I'm in my late 20s, and I'm very fortunate to have a good job and to be able to save every year. So I've contributed the maximum allowable amount to my IRA for the past few years. And yeah, my question is really about that maximum amount. You know, am I allowed now to say, like, oh, okay, I'm done. You know, I contributed as much as I can.
Done.
Or should I really try to save more if I can? And I think I can. So what might be a good way to save, you know, once I've kind of maxed out my designated retirement accounts, what should I think about doing next?
First off, very impressive, Ginger. I have to say, 28 maxing out your Roth IRA contribution is
very good.
Thank you.
Tell us about some of your other goals. Like, you know, you're young and you've got some money that you're putting away for retirement. Did you ever think, you know, are you trying to accumulate money to maybe buy a house or do something different in the near to intermediate term?
Yeah, I kind of have trouble thinking about those kinds of commitments. You know, my mom keeps telling me that I should be saving for a house, but that doesn't really sound fun to me. I don't really want to own a house.
But I have a question. Is saving for retirement fun for you?
Well, I guess, I feel this need to save in general. I just feel like it's something that I should do. And retirement is the farthest off, you know, most kind of unimaginable at this point. Goal. And so it's something that I don't really have to commit to. It's just this this thing that I can look forward to. But a house is kind of like, I would rather be able to travel. I'd rather be able to move around. I'd rather be free.
Okay, let's not call it a house fund. Let's just call it a different thing. Let's just call it something else, because I think I'll make you feel better about this. Because you've actually made a pretty major league commitment. You are committing to invest for 30 years. That's what happens with retirement, right? You can't pull the money out till you're 59 and a half. So you've just made a 30-year commitment. Of course, you know, it is with yourself, so it's not so bad. But I think that it would work if you created some kind of account. Let's call it a general investment account. I'm not going to call it a house account or anything like that. Just a separate account that is not does not enjoy any tax preference. It's just a plain old taxable account where you can start putting money away, where it could be your travel fund, or it could be your new car fund.
Or house fund.
Shh, quiet, don't say that. See what we're doing? We're playing a game here. And you can use that money for whatever comes up in the near term. Mm-hmm. Now, the only thing is that in that kind of general investment account, you would probably want to invest in a more conservative fashion, because if you decide that a year from now you want to go to Africa and you want to pull a lot of money out, you don't want there to be a ton of risk in the account. So you want to stick to a more conservative type of investment than you would be doing in your retirement account, because, you know, think of this as a, you know, 2 to 5 year fund versus a 30-year fund.
Sure. That makes sense.
Ginger, thanks so much for contacting us.
All right. Thank you.
And Jill Schlesinger, thank you so much for being with us.
It was such a great pleasure. And I'm glad that we could give people both the real stuff, but we could also make it a little bit of fun. Remember, most of this is very emotional. Everyone gets that. But you have to really be clear that once you push those emotions away, there are some concrete choices that you can make to really improve your financial life.
Good advice, Jill. Jill Schlesinger is CBS News business analyst and a certified financial planner.